Hello, I'm Eddie Merckx. Welcome to the VeloCast.
And welcome once again to another edition of the VeloCast. My name is Scott.
And I'm John.
Well, it was one of the most highly anticipated stages on this year's Tour de France route, and one that had the potential to be a deciding factor in this year's race. So the question is, did today's 213-kilometre stage across the pavé live up to its expectations?
Yeah, it was bloody awesome.
It was fantastic, wasn't it?
I actually don't care about... Well, I do vaguely care about yesterday, and we'll talk about it briefly. But they redeemed themselves today. That was one of the best days of tour racing I've seen in years. It was worthy of a stage of the Giro.
Praise indeed. No, I agree with you. It was just fascinating watching. And I just loved every second of it. It was great seeing kind of Paris-Roubaix conditions in July. There was something just magical about that.
Oh no, there were some iconic shots, and there's going to be some great stills from the likes of Graham Watson that come out of today's racing. I mean, just brilliant stuff. Before we get into the race, though, we have to kind of grovel.
Go on.
I'm actively embarrassed about this. However, but we've got an apology to make, I'll be blunt. And before we make it, I'd like to offer some amelioration of of our situation. Yesterday was a fairly classic day of our daily podcast about the tour. And it started with me getting up at 4:30. Now, this isn't looking for sympathy. I mean, I love what we're doing. This is really adding to my enjoyment of the tour. I spent most of the night chatting to folk on Twitter because I'm so stoked about the tour. You know, I mean, this isn't asking for sympathy. But got up at 4:30, you know, did my posty thing. We've got folk off, so, you know, I worked a long day. Figured my break so that I would see the end of yesterday's stage, which, let's be blunt, was a waste of my time. I mean, I'd been as well doing some crochet or something. Went back to work to do collections. Got in at 7:15. 7:10, I'm sitting with a cup of coffee. 7:05, we start recording. I think the show was out by 8:00 after you'd edited
it. Yes, I was out really, really quickly. I got the show packaged up, uploaded and published.
So let's be blunt. I mean, our normal show is we take 2 or 3 days prep, although that's hard to believe if you listen to something.
Believe it or not, folks.
But this one is literally quick and dirty responses to the day. And we've got the stage number in wrong.
Yes, we kind of have.
The prologue isn't a stage. I mean, let's be blunt. The prologue isn't a stage, and we've been counting days instead of stages. So we've been talking about stage 3 when it's actually stage 2 and that sort of thing. So feel like a punter, but it'll be fixed from today. And I thank a couple of guys on the comments page of our website, velocast.co.uk, for pointing it out. However, and I'm trying not to be nasty here, I really am, if you're the kind of man who leaves a 3-star review on iTunes because of it and listens to a lot of podcasts and would appreciate it if the description was accurate, we're probably not for you. You should listen to some of the other...
Yes, and we shall gladly refund all the money that you spent.
We're not paid to do it every day. We will make the odd mistake. You know, get over it, for God's sake.
Right, shall we talk about some racing?
Let's talk about racing, because seriously, one of the best days racing I've seen in a tour for a very long time.
Definitely. Well, we had another early break today where Steve Cummings from Team Sky, Ryder Hechtedal from Garmin...
Brilliant name, sorry. I'm sorry to interrupt. Ryder Hechtedal is one of the best names you can have for a cyclist.
And there's another one just coming. Pavel Brut from Katusha. Pierre Roland from B-Box Boys Telecom. Roger Cluj from Milram. Stefan Ogier from Cofidis. And Emmanuel Hervetti from Castapagna took off up the road after about 12k and actually got up a reasonable gap. I think it was nearly 5 minutes at one point.
Well, one of the geniuses of the design of today's stage was that, you know, the pavé, the excitement, if you like, was concentrated towards the back end of it. So we got the normal breakaway, but I was thinking about my rider for the day, and I've got to say I've had a very strange day watching the race, because I mentioned yesterday that I might have to work some overtime, and in fact I did, and I had to leave watching the race with 40k to go.
Oh, that's not good.
But I was like Churchill in his war room. I had six or seven people set up, you know, to text message me what was happening. So every 5 minutes I'd pull over into a lay-by or whatever, check what was happening. It was a fantastic way to watch the race. I mean, it really was. And then when I came back, I watched it just at 2x on Sky Plus. So I think I'm just about there. Thanks to everybody who helped me out with their text messages. But I mean, Highstyle was one of the guys who was one of the guys of the day for me. I mean, it was an awesome ride for me.
Yeah, it was. And everything, I think, changed as soon as we hit the third section of the pavé, that of Sarzé-Rossier, which just tore the race apart. We had crashes and punctures and, you know, a series of things going wrong for a whole host of people. As soon as we hit that section of the cobbles, Frank Schleck went down, as did his teammate Matty Breschel and Yanni Brakovic from Radio Shack.
Yeah, I mean, that was carnage. As soon as Schleck went down, you saw he had a broken collarbone. I mean, it was obvious when folk were trying to manoeuvre their bikes around him the way he was holding himself. His race was over. And in fact, you had Jens Vogt. There's a man who's seen it all, but he just kind of looked down, shrugged his shoulders and pointed to the team guy. No, just put the bike back in the car. It's a waste of time bringing it down, mate.
His brother, though, Andy, was at that point being escorted by Fabian Cancellara across the pavé. And the two of them, I mean, strange to say of Andy Schleck, looked to be really enjoying his time on the cobbles.
Ride of the day. Absolute ride of the day. I mean, Schleck, we've noted his lack of prowess as a time trialist. I was expecting him to suffer today. Cancellara and him, you know, at the finish, slapped, you know, high-fived each other because they'd done such a good job, and they had. Bjarne Riis should be really proud of that strategy, and Andy Schleck did the ride of his life today. And he's going to need time come that big Bordeaux time trial. So this is the start of it. You know, he's got some time. He needs to attack in the hills. He needs to take any chance he can get to gain some time over Contador and Armstrong and, you know, and the others. Yeah. And that was a masterstroke today, and it's got to be a good psychological blow and a booster for him.
Well, up ahead, we had Hesjedal being the only survivor of the group, and essentially the peloton was split right across the road. Well, that first group, which was in pursuit of the Canadian, included Cancellara and Andy Schleck, as we said, but also included Cadel Evans and Tor Hushovd. And we had a second group with Alberto Contador and his teammate Alexander Vinokourov. So it was just fascinating to watch. And then it just when we thought it couldn't get any better, and I don't mean any kind of, you know, schadenfreude here, but just in terms of a spectacle, we had the picture of Lance Armstrong suffering a puncture.
I actually want to make special mention of Geraint Thomas today. What a joy it was to see the, I mean, and I'm being, you know, all jingoist and all that kind of thing here, but what a joy to see the British champions jersey in, you know, in prominent place today. He did an awesome ride as well.
Yeah, that was fantastic. I mean, riding along the cobbles with Cancellara and Schleck and Cadel Evans, it just looked fantastic.
I'm actually sitting here thinking about who's my man of the day, and I'm having a real struggle to do it because there were so many standout performances. When Armstrong punctured, though, the whole dynamic of the race changed. You're right. Popo did a great job towing him back, but I actually think Armstrong did a bloody good job to get into the group he did.
Armstrong did. When they hit the section of, I mean, as you said, Popovic was towing him back and was working like a dog to get him back, but when they hit a section of cobbles, Armstrong just dropped. I think there was a Cofidis rider with the two of them, dropped Popovic like a stone and flew off up the road. I mean, at one point I tweeted, because I thought he was getting somewhat of an unfair advantage drafting behind a team car, but I haven't thought about it and looked at it again.
You often see that in Paris-Roubaix.
Because the road is so narrow,
nature of the roads, and I think it was the Sky car that he was following, and I'm sure if he could have, Dave Brailsford would have stood in the brakes and put Armstrong through his back window. So I'm not sure it was an advantage.
Well, we've got to talk as well about Sylvain Chavanel, who in the yellow jersey, you would think he'd be
luckiest
having
man in France and Belgium today, wasn't he?
Oh dear, what a day he had. And I think there was two bike changes.
At least, I mean, as I say, I was following it through through not tweets, but through text messages, and we go, "Oh, Chavanel's changing his bike again." He didn't have a lucky day. No. I mean, it was a joy to see him win yesterday, and he's a very deserving winner, and somebody I think who deserved the honour of wearing the jersey into France. But he had a shit day today. I mean, he just
really did. Yes. Well, Hesseder was caught with 6.5k to go, and I think I certainly was. Everyone was just doing the maths to see who was going to be the big winners in terms of the current GC, and of course, looking to the future and the ultimate GC for this year, as we had that group with Cancellara and Schleck, and then another group with Contador, and then Armstrong trying to chase back. What a brilliant finish. I mean, in terms of who was going to win the stage, I don't think anybody could have put money against it being Tor Hushovd. And indeed, that was the case, of course.
Yeah, I got very excited for a brief while when I forgot that Cancellara was slightly in front of Geraint Thomas, because I actually thought Geraint Thomas was going to take yellow.
Hey, you weren't the only one. Paul Sherwin and Phil Liggett did the same. They were going...
Oh, I haven't seen that. But yeah, I mean, I was going apeshit in the van.
We've got to mention the point at which Contador's group came across the finish line, because I think at first glance it looked like Vino didn't know, or he didn't care, that he had popped his team leader off the back and was essentially just bringing Bradley Wiggins home. But I think I've got to give praise to Alexander Vinokourov here. The intelligence,
no, that was genius. I mean,
yeah, shown the, to realise that they were in the last 2K, so to power on and get the best time possible was actually a good thing for his team leader, that Contador would be given the same time as Vinokourov crossing the line.
Well, the tactical analysts whose sisters and mothers are locked up in a basement in Kazakhstan clearly did a fantastic job and whispered in Vino's ear, because it was within the last 3K, Contador punctured it. And going by his reaction, I don't think Contador had thought it through as well as Vino.
No, he was furious going over the line.
But, you know, Vino knew that within the last 3K, Contador got the same time as him. So if he pushed really hard, he was actually gaining time for Bert. And, I mean, we may be crediting Vino with more intelligence than he's due. And he might just have been a nasty T-Mobile, you know,
back
whatever.
To T-Mobile again, where he rode for himself. I doubt it. I thought. I mean, I agree with you. That was my immediate reaction. Vino, what are you doing, you lunatic?
Yeah, but the net result was it was the best thing to do for Bert.
Yeah, yeah.
Chapeau.
Definitely. In terms of winners, losers today, we had Contador, who lost 1:13 to Cadel Evans and Andy Schleck, and Lance Armstrong, who lost 2:08 to that pair as well.
I've had a look at the GC, and I actually don't think it shook the race up beautifully. It was a magnificent day's racing. It's not a decisive day's racing for the GC. Frank Schleck was always going to be in the service of his brother Andy, so although he's an awesome rider, I don't think he was a GC contender. The others are close enough that, you know, there are differences made in time, but the main differences are psychological. Bert rode a stormer today.
Which was what my next point was, because I think for the last 9 months we've been salivating over the prospect of seeing how Alberto Contador would do on the cobbles, and he rode a fantastic race today.
There was a fantastic wee bit where he was pulling, or I think Lance was moving up through the group smoothly, and Contador was getting squeezed. You know, he wanted to move up with Lance, so he was getting squeezed so he couldn't get out. And he just did that classic Paris-Roubaix riders bunny hop onto the pavement.
Mm.
And then back off again. I mean, whatever they're paying Peter Pan Van Pettigam, it's not enough.
Yeah, totally.
Bert did an awesome ride today. Andy Schleck, I mean, unbelievable, and not in the pejorative sense of the word. I mean, that was team strategy at its best. Andy Schleck, you know, brilliant ride. Evans looked every inch the world champion. I mean, brilliant ride again. I mean, I don't have enough praise for Cadel Evans this year, which for people who've listened to the Velocast a lot will know, you know, that's pretty high praise.
It is high praise, considering we did nothing but give the guy a hard time last year. Yeah,
for looking like a pile of crap on a bike. I tell you though, one question that's been answered is Wiggins has come ready to play. You know, he was up there as well, and Sky were up there. So, I mean, we'll get more answers when the high mountains start. But, you know, I was openly a bit sceptical about Wiggo before the start. You know, we talked about him maybe being a flash in the pan. But he's come ready to play. So, that's the start of the questions being answered about him. Yep. Cav did well as well, you know, finished up there. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of good rides today. And after yesterday, where, you know, anybody who listened to the show will know, I was probably a bit cynical and depressed about the race. I am gagging for the hills now.
Yes. Well, just when you mentioned yesterday, we weren't the only ones, obviously, that expressed somewhat of a grumpy attitude to the farce that was yesterday's stage. Indeed, chief amongst them was Tor Hushoft, who told, in fact, he delayed, I think, several hours before speaking to the media at all. But eventually he was speaking to Cycling News and said, "What happened is not normal. I'm very sorry for the riders who crashed. It was a big mess, but yet this is still a bike race. Crashes happen all the time. It's really a big mistake from the ASO and the UCI commissioners to agree to neutralise the end of the stage. Things like this shouldn't happen. Why should Cancellara decide?" the Norwegian questioned. "He's a rider like us. I've been riding all day for the stage one and the green jersey and I end up with nothing." Well said, Tor.
Aye, Stephen Roach. I got his name wrong the other day. I called him Simon Richardson, but James Richardson. Quite a few folk defended him, you know, the Eurosport anchor guy.
Yeah, yeah.
So I watched Eurosport today. And I've got to say, the Eurosport setup commentary was great because they had Stephen Roach and they had Big Maggie Bagstad, who's won Paris-Roubaix. And Roach and Bagstad couldn't understand either. I mean, they actually were slightly more lenient than us because they said, fair enough, wait for the riders to get together at the foot of the hill, but then race the last 20K. And they were really angry. And
You were talking earlier on, John, before we started recording, about that point at the bottom of the hill where... Now, was it Basso was essentially...
Sastre
was 3 minutes ahead, and how the dynamic of the entire GC could have been turned upside down.
Well, not just the GC. We've got the GC and the maillot vert, the green jersey, because what we've got is it could have been Hushoff's second win in the trot with Cavendish getting no points. Now, that would make a really material difference. Because make no mistake, I was delighted to see Chavanel win yesterday. But if that group of, you know, Isel and Hushoft and Cancellara had chased, you know, Chavanel was history. They were going to catch him. And it's likely Hushoft would have won. More important, though, and a show of how it wasn't an impossible descent and everybody fell off and it was an act of God. At the bottom of that, there were two riders with that group, and they were Carlos Sastre and Denis Menchov. Now, both of those are genuinely GC contenders, and if they'd gone into the Jura, you know, in the Alps and then the Pyrenees with a 3 or 4 minute advantage over, you know, the Schlecks, Armstrong, Contador, the entire dynamic of the race would have been changed. And I think it would have been changed for the better. So, you know, let's not think that was a victimless decision yesterday. People lost their chance at the GC and had their chances at the green jersey seriously hampered by that decision to neutralise the end of the race yesterday. And they should have raced. They just should have raced.
Yep. Now, we've got some great news for the Gazzetta dello Velocast Mini League. The wonderful Sean Lally from Cycle Systems Academy has agreed to donate a 10-day training course as a prize for the Mini League itself. Now, we've talked about Cycle Systems Academy before on the show, but for those of you that don't know about it, the Cycle Systems Academy course offers a full accreditation in the City and Guilds VSQ in cycle maintenance and repair, and will therefore give anyone doing it an internationally recognised certificate in the highest qualification available in cycle mechanics. Now, crucially, this accreditation is available to you even if you don't currently work within the cycle trade, so you don't need a work placement or anything to study with them. You should have a quick look at the sponsor list and see, you know, how much the industry believes in this course, and I encourage everybody to head over to www.cycle-systems-academy.co.uk and check them out. They do some fantastic work there. So a big thanks once again to Sean for a great prize.
Well, it's a great prize because, I mean, to be blunt, it could change somebody's life. You know, this course, they'll be able to walk in as a mechanic in any bike shop in the world, more or less. And Sean, I mean, I've had some long and enjoyable chats with Sean, who lives in a rather bizarrely in a houseboat in the Thames. But I mean, you look at the place where they teach people, it's like mechanic porn city. I mean, they've just got fantastic workstations, fantastic tool sets. Their online training, which they're rolling out, is fantastic. And I'm a mechanic. I'm gushing about this because I believe in it. But the big thing is, you know, this isn't just a wee prize. Sean is booked up, you know, for a big chunk of time in advance. And he's offering a place here that retail, you know, if you were paying to go in this course, £1,200. Now, there's a few other prizes come in. I mean, that one blew my mind this morning. I just emailed back Sean and said, you know, geez, Sean, I'm not sure what to say. You know, if you're in America, which a lot of our listeners are and a lot of people in the league, for 10 days, it'd be worth coming across for a holiday, getting some accommodation and getting the training at the same time. Anyway, there's also some other folk who have been incredibly generous in coming with prizes, and there are a couple that are a bit shaky, just not shaky, but, you know, they're subject to confirmation at the moment, so I won't mention them. But Sufferfest, who we gave a really positive review to on the main Velocast, they do the training videos that help you tolerate the tedium of turbo training.
I remember you talking about it and saying how good it was. Good in an odd way.
They're coming in with some prizes. Fine ADC, James is a good mate of mine, so it's no surprise that he's coughing up some prizes.
I don't think he had any choice.
No, I just bullied him passively until he agreed to it. And there's a company who haven't even been, you know, been founded yet, who are doing a price comparison site for bicycles, who have offered us some prizes. You know, there's loads of people talking to us about this, and it started, I'll be blunt, as a wee bit of a laugh. With Simon Lamb of La Gazzetta della Bici, which I'd recommend everybody goes and looks at if you're not, you know, shy about swearing. Simon's a brilliant blogger and is our partner in the league. And it's turned into something that's got a life of its own. So, you know, if you want to get in and offer some prizes and get a mention, still give us some, because folk are having fun with us. And my team's shagged, by the way.
Hey, I think you're only at number 40.
Yeah, but I mean, I've got Hessink and Farrar. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I think I've got both of them as well. You know, so.
I mean, a lot of my guys did well, but without Hessink and Farrar firing on all cylinders, I'm knackered.
Yes. Well, I think that's probably all we have time for today. Thank you so much for listening and staying subscribed. You can contact us by visiting our website at velocast.co.uk, where you can also find out how you can donate or subscribe to the show. Well, we hope you can join us following stage 4 of this year's Tour de France, where hopefully I won't sound like I've been gargling nails, for another edition of the Velocast.